Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, May 13, 2014. A coalition of lawyers and other leaders in South Sudan float a plan for interim government, but will both sides buy the proposal?
By definition, if you say it's a collegial presidency composed of five, then maybe have we excluded President Salva, Riek Machar, that one need to be looked at.
And the UN boss says South Sudan's internally displaced persons are living in worst conditions.
I was appalled at the conditions they are having to endure, which are worse than in any of the many refugee camps I have visited around the world, including the refugee camps for Syrian people.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A group of former government officials, think tanks, analysts, and lawyers have crafted a plan for what South Sudan's interim government could look like. They have already received support for their idea from mediators at the ongoing peace talks in Addis Ababa. Andrew Green has the story for VOA from Juba.
The draft proposal, released over the weekend by the Development Policy Forum, calls for a complete government overhaul. It would include a five-person presidency and 21 different cabinet positions. Dr. Lual A. Dang is the managing director of the Ebony Center for Strategic Studies, a local think tank that manages the policy forum. He says they were inspired by U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry's call earlier this month for President Salva Kiir to strongly consider an interim government.
We determine the objectives, deliverables, outputs, and then the activities required. And then we work backward and see, okay, these are what is required for an interim. Then what would be the size? We felt that comfortably you need 18 ministries plus a prime minister and two deputies. So you have 21.
Deng says these would be the critical positions and could be staffed by technocrats who would address the country's gaping needs, including conducting a census, getting voters registered, and finalizing a new constitution. He says they would also work on improved service delivery and job creation. The collegial presidency would focus on promoting social cohesion, and Deng says the interim government might eliminate the legislature entirely, since the main focus would be on implementing existing legislation, not passing new laws. The three-year interim period would end with national elections. He says it is not his job to answer the big question of whether President Salva Kiir or rebel leader Riek Machar will play a role in the new government.
By definition, if you say it's a collegial presidency composed of five, then maybe have we excluded President Salva, Riek Machar? That one need to be looked at. But we leave it this more of a political debate. Which we want to allow the political parties and the other political elite to follow.
Deng says they have shown a copy of the proposal to Kenyan General Lazaro Sambwayo, who is helping to mediate the ongoing Addis Ababa talks.
They seem to be happy with it because they say that it will make their work easy, reduce the number of days spent on because people are dying since cessation of hostilities is not there. But if there's a document like that, then it will become easier.
Deng says he believes President Kiir and Machar might also have seen copies. He says the proposal might have been the origin for President Kiir's statements over the weekend that national elections will be postponed by 2 or 3 years. A vote was supposed to take place next year. For VOA News, I am Andrew Green in Juba.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon says he's concerned about the breaches to South Sudan's ceasefire agreement signed Friday in the Ethiopian capital. VOA's Margaret Bashar has more from the United Nations headquarters in New York.
Mr. Ban told the UN Security Council Monday that President Salva Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar must work together to heal the country and end the violence that has killed thousands of civilians since December.
If the conflict continues, half of the South Sudan's 12 million people will either be displaced internally, refugees abroad, starving, or dead by the year's end.
The two South Sudanese leaders met Friday in Addis Ababa and signed a peace deal. But fighting has flared in recent days, with both sides accusing the other of breaking the truce. The Secretary General told reporters that the onus is now on the two leaders to set aside their power struggle and accelerate momentum for peace.
I ask the Security Council they should continuously be engaged and render strong political messages, including taking necessary measures.
Necessary measures is often diplomatic shorthand for sanctions. Last week, Mr. Bond made an unannounced one-day visit to the capital, Juba. He met with President Kiir and then visited displaced civilians sheltering at a UN base where 20,000 people have sought protection from the fighting.
I was appalled at the conditions they are having to endure, which are worse than in any of the many refugee camps I have visited around the world, including the refugee camps for Syrian people.
The UN mission has taken in 80,000 displaced persons seeking emergency protection at its bases across the country. Mr. Bond said the bases are not intended as camps, but that the UN is working to make them safer and more hygienic. He said the government and opposition must cooperate to allow humanitarian aid to reach those in need, and he urged respect of a proposed 30 days of tranquility to allow civilians to return home for the planting season, as fears grow about a possible famine. The UN and Norway will co-host a donors conference for South Sudan on May 20th in Oslo. Last week, the UN mission in South Sudan issued a report saying there are reasonable grounds to believe both sides have committed crimes against humanity during the conflict. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Radio stations across the country have started broadcasting new radio dramas that follow the lives of young South Sudanese as they struggle to become leaders and peace builders in their communities. The organizers of the drama believe the skits will get people talking about critical issues facing South Sudan. From Nairobi, Lucy Pony has the story for VOA.
Sanusi Usman is a producer at Free Voice, a local media company that oversaw the development of the dramas called Sawa Shabab, which means Together Youth. He says from the very first days in the studio, the program has been bringing people from different communities together.
The first day, everybody walked in. They don't know each other, but because of what is happening back here in South Sudan, they came into the room and they immediately divided themselves to two groups. Nuer speakers and Dinka speakers. I was very worried about that. But as we developed our relationship to Sawa Shabab, to the story, we engaged and dive in the story. So people started to loosen a bit and to exchange phone numbers.
Usman says the first season is 20 episodes long and was recorded in English, Arabic, Dinka, and Nuer, so it could reach a wide variety of people. The first five episodes are already broadcasting on dozens of stations. He says they decided to approach the program by describing everyday experiences South Sudanese people have in order to get at larger issues, including ethnic identity, gender equality, and early child marriage. 25-year-old actor Maria Young says that is why she was drawn to the project.
It's an approach. It is not a solution. The solution is not in the hands of two or three people getting together. It's a collective work of young people all over the country doing different activities. Some are farming together. Some are teaching together in schools. It's that teamwork of ethnic diversity is the way forward.
I am a dreamer. The sky is the limit. And the clouds? I'll never get this right.
Roz! Get up! It's 6 a.m. and you're still in bed?
Mama, I'm tired. I'm getting ready to go to school.
I'm tired? Am I just hearing you right?
The group gave a live performance of one of their skits last week in Juba. In this episode, Rose is doing homework while her mother yells at her to do chores around the house. The skit ends with Rose failing to make it to school on time. Jacqueline Tabu, a second-year language student at the University of Juba, watched the performance. She thinks it's an effective way to open up communication about the big issues in South Sudan, especially regarding girls and women.
Whenever you're having something in you, you want to express it out, it will give you a hard time because they're oppressing us, we ladies, they're oppressing us down not to really express what you have out there. So interesting with that drama. When they go out there and act like that, at least it will teach our parents not really to oppress girls at home.
Theodolan is the senior program officer with the Peace Tech Initiative at the United States Institute for Peace, which sponsored Sawa Shabab. He says Tabu's reaction is exactly why they wanted to fund the program.
To raise awareness and begin to change attitudes of South Sudanese youth about the potential for building peace and the youth's role as individuals and as a youth group in creating change and building peace in South Sudan.
Dolan says Sawa Shabab is more than just a radio program.
We actually have integrated an SMS component into the program so that at the end of each episode, we ask a question to our youth audience that's related to the program, that particular episode, and we ask youth to text in with their answers. And so far, we've had a decent response.
Free Voices Osman says new episodes will air next month. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pone in Nairobi.
Authorities in Wau have ordered street vendors out of town. They suspect the hawkers are largely responsible for crimes committed in the town's crowded markets. But street sellers in the town deny they are stealing anything and tell VOA's Michael Atit the government is robbing them of their livelihoods.
27-year-old Garang Gwak sells spare electronic parts out of the wheelbarrow in Joe Market in the middle of Wau town. He says he does not have enough money to rent or build a shop.
I have no proper place to run my business, and I have no money to rent a place for that. We sell stuff on the street in order to make a living. The municipal authorities kick us out of these spaces, saying they don't want to see anyone selling stuff on the street, but they never designate spaces for us or tell us where we're supposed to do our business.
Gwak says if he loses his job, he will not be able to buy food for his wife and two children. Deputy Mayor Anthony Charles says the city government decided to move the vendors this month because victims in recent crimes have identified street vendors as the main culprits.
The security situation in the market is characterized by those street boys who come around here and snatch money and items out of the hands of the women and children who come to shop here. So we want to restore security and ensure the protection of the possessions of those who come to shop in the market.
Charles says there were 17 incidents last month where victims identified street sellers as attackers. He says no arrests have been made, which is why city officials decided to take matters into their own hands. Garang Anyar Deng says the government has no right to force them out. He has a small stand where he rents his motorbike to people. He says he has been paying £50 each month to the city for the right to operate his stand, even though he does not have a permanent location.
They make us pay £50 a month, and now they're saying they don't want to see anyone selling items or pulling carts on the street. How are we supposed to make a living? We have kids who go to school and come afterwards with their carts to sell stuff so that they can eat and continue living.
Charles says the government has provided a space about 300 meters away from the market for the vendors to walk. But Deng says his customers won't walk that far to do business. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Being bitten by a dog is painful and can be very dangerous. It can cause infection and even rabies. Children are particularly vulnerable to dog attacks because they are short and their faces are usually close to the animals. To protect yourself and your family, avoid strange dogs and teach children to stay away from them. If a strange dog approaches you, remain calm and avoid direct eye contact, which the dog can understand as aggression. Never run from a dog. They like to chase moving objects, and most dogs can run faster than people can. If you are attacked, try to stand still with your feet together. Protect your neck and face with your arms and hands. Then call for help. And if you or someone you know has been bitten and the skin has been broken, seek medical treatment immediately.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, pregnant working women face tough challenges all over the world. That story after this.
You don't want to miss VOA's South Sudan in Focus, and there are now a number of options for listening. You can hear us on one of our FM affiliate stations around the country. Check out our website, voanews.com/South Sudan, for the listings. In Juba, you can listen to South Sudan in Focus at 8 p.m. on 93.5, VOA's 24-hour station. You can also find us on the following shortwave frequencies, 11620, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. Or you can listen on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan. You can also download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think teachers get enough respect in society?
There was a time in the past whereby teachers were being respected, more especially in the one-party regime.
I don't think they're respected, because back then, back in the days, when you were a teacher, you were like at the top of the league of rich people. But nowadays, it's just another... I don't think they're given enough respect.
To me, in the African setup, I think we really don't value the teachers or give them the respect that they need, because we've tended to value people according to the amount of money they get.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday, It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today, we are talking about maternity protection on the job. A new report by the International Labour Organization finds the vast majority of female workers, at least 830 million, do not have adequate maternity protection and continue to face discrimination in the labour market. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the launch of the report in Geneva.
The International Labour Organization says progress is being made in maternity protection, yet motherhood remains a handicap for far too many women in the world of work. ILO Gender Equality and Diversity Branch Chief Shauna Olney says almost 80% of the 830 million women who lack maternity protection are in sub-Saharan Africa and Asia.
The report also shows that some groups of workers, often female-dominated, are excluded entirely from protection in law and practice. We look at self-employed women, migrant, domestic, agricultural, casual, and temporary workers, as well as Indigenous and tribal peoples.
The ILO has passed three conventions since 1919 that aim to protect pregnant and nursing mothers against health hazards at work, provide paid maternity leave, and protect women against discrimination and dismissal in relation to maternity. It says 66 out of 185 countries and territories have adopted at least one of these conventions. The report also sees a gradual shift towards maternity leave periods that meet or exceed the 14-week ILO standard. It finds only three countries in the world The United States, Papua New Guinea, and Oman do not provide mandatory payments during maternity leave, but provide the right to voluntary unpaid maternity leave. The ILO says the vast majority of countries explicitly prohibit discrimination during pregnancy and leave. Report author, ILO Maternity Protection and Work Family Specialist Laura Adati tells VOA, society loses when it does not provide maternity protection.
In terms of the consequence for society is that many women, one out of five of those that don't have access to family leave, declare that their choice, their leave choice, is to drop out the labor force. This is an enormous waste of talent. In terms of productivity and the role, the contribution that women can make to society.
Adati says working parents should have access to affordable childcare services so women can return to work productively once their maternity leave ends. The report says many countries are also taking measures to support working fathers. It says leave provisions for fathers are most common in developed economies, Africa, Eastern Europe, and Central Asia. In most instances, employers bear the full cost of benefits related to maternity and paternity leave. The ILO recommends nations move away from employer liability and pay for maternity and paternity benefits through social insurance or public funds and social care services. It says taking this monetary weight off employers would promote non-discrimination at work. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And more health-related news. The International Organization for Immigration is conducting its first masked oral cholera vaccination campaign in South Sudan. The organization says the rainy season has dramatically raised the threat level of waterborne diseases such as cholera for 86,000 civilians sheltering at IDP camps across the country. Harish Murith, the information officer for IOM in Juba, tells VOA's Kim Lewis about sites where officials are concerned about the spread of waterborne diseases.
There is extreme overcrowding as well as poor sanitation facilities. There is too few latrines and many people who are using them. So, plus also the latrines end up getting filled along with the flooding of some parts of the POC. It causes a very dangerous environment where waterborne diseases, in this case also cholera, is a threat which we're trying to mitigate.
I understand that you all have started a campaign in South Sudan, an oral cholera vaccination campaign that began on May 6th, and you have a second round coming up on May 20th. How is the campaign going so far?
The campaign has been so far effective. We have managed to vaccinate over 2,800 people. And over the second round, we plan to cover the remaining population count of the POC. The current IDP figures at the POC stand at 3,600. This is an estimate because there's a lot of IDPs who are leaving the Bor POC to other areas, namely to Juba. So between now and the 20th, the population figures could rise or could fall. So we want to make sure that we cover all the IDPs at the site, because also the threat of people who are infected moving to other sites and cholera being introduced is a potential threat we are trying to mitigate.
Do you all have any cases of any outbreaks at this time?
So far in Bor, there has been no outbreak, but WHO is following up potential threats or cases in the POC site in Juba, but it has not been officially confirmed because the Ministry of Health has not declared an outbreak. But according to WHO standards, even one case is considered an outbreak.
What are some of your other concerns right now regarding the health situation?
With also the rainy season, there's rising threat of eye infections as well as measles, because the conditions in the POC site are there's high overcrowding. Many of the IDP population in the POC sites are getting agitated because of that. And, of course, IOM is at the forefront in trying to improve the POC site by, building more latrines, by, expanding the site so there's a better living environment for thousands of IDP families.
Do the IDPs have enough access to safe drinking water at this time?
In many of the sites, within minimum standards, but, again, IOM is trying to build up more water pipelines and treatment facilities in the areas of Benchu, Jonglei, and in Upper Nile. So we're trying to increase access to clean water to counter the threat of waterborne diseases. Because in the rainy season, given the situation of overcrowding as well as very poor sanitation practices among the IDP population, we are trying to work as hard as we can to counter this threat.
You mentioned that your next campaign will begin on May 20th in Bor. After that, what is the anticipation of campaigns?
There is going to be more, but so far we have not set dates for those because we are trying to identify priority POC sites where the threat is highest, and we will work according to those priority locations.
That's Harish Murith, the Information and Reporting Officer for IOM in Juba, speaking to VOA's Kim Lewis earlier today. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. The father of one of the nearly 300 schoolgirls kidnapped in Nigeria says he recognized his daughter in a video released by militant group Boko Haram. The man, whose first name is Shetima, tells VOA he spotted his 18-year-old daughter in the video and believes he also recognized a neighbor's daughter. The man is a resident of Chibok, where the girls were kidnapped. He did not want his last name nor his daughter's name publicly released for reasons of safety. Yesterday, Boko Haram released a 17-minute video showing about 100 girls dressed in black and gray full-length hijabs sitting in an undisclosed rural area. Most of the girls kidnapped are Christian, but the video shows girls reciting Muslim scriptures and holding their hands for prayers. U.S. Treasury Secretary Jack Lew is urging China to allow the market to play a bigger role in determining the value of the yuan currency. Lew made the comments in Beijing today ahead of meetings with Premier Li Keqiang and Vice Premier Wang Yang. Being announced in March that Beijing it would allow the value of the yuan to fluctuate more against the dollar. And finally, the German foreign minister is visiting Ukraine to help start talks between the Ukrainian government and pro-Russian separatists following declarations of independence by the eastern regions of Donetsk and Luhansk. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song You Are One in a Million by Justin Simpleman. Wayamu makuri ngatwa awinyu kuruma geken dali ibaru ya kuji kuji kuri lenginen ti buri geken badali ibaru ya kuji kuji kuri lenginen ti buri geken badali korona mingo gurbari that walwo kuma yo biere korona mingo gurbari that walwo kuma yo biere ikinwa one in a million you better than them my baby
ano kuyo one kuri One in a million, you're better than them, my love.
I know for your one quid.
One in a million, you're better than them, my baby.
I know for your one quid.
One in a million, you're better than them, my love.
I know for your one
quid. Tell the rugong, mirima ituna kaiti mudong enne kumeli weng.
Biru tell the rugong, mirima ituna kaiti mudong enne kumeli weng.
Wodong loya ki fully ken kaiti ngera lato.
We have been listening to Justin Simpleman with the song You Are One in a Million. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and join us tomorrow again for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.